You're listening to Lunch with Lloyd.
On Dubai I 103.8.
Hi there, it's Mark Lloyd from Lunch with Lloyd. Welcome along to this podcast. I know you're going to love it, especially if you're into your Japanese food. As I spoke to the ramen queen, Niha Mishra from Kinoya, let me tell you what she doesn't know about Japanese food ain't worth knowing. She's opened up a brand new restaurant, definitely well worth checking out. We also talked to Vit Patel from Dubai Lad at What's Trending, what are the lads chatting about this week, and Fatima Zahra joined us. Very unusual interview. She's an animal communicator. She can feel the emotions and talk to the animals. A little Dr. Dolittle-ish, but very, very interesting lady. Also, the music business is what I love talking about, and we were talking to Albert Carter. Very interesting guy. Started out his life as a rapper, and he's here in the UAE to help shape the music business as we go forward. And finally, the Dubai Drama Group. Directors and actors came on to the show to talk about their brand new performance, which is going to be happening at real soon. So good for the Dubai Drama Group to be back on stages.
This is Lunch with Lloyd
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
We are going to be talking food, and a lady by the name of Niha Mishra joins us on the phone. She's fondly known as Dubai's very own ramen queen. She started cooking traditional Japanese dishes out of her home, which became a sellout supper club, and now she's opened her very own restaurant, and it's called Kinoya. And Niha joins us on the line. Niha, how are you doing today?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
Fantastic. You sound bright and bubbly and looking forward to Eid, I'm sure. So let me ask, first of all, how a lady who originates from India got such a fascination for ramen and Japanese food? How did it all happen?
I've been cooking for myself for a really long time, and it was a hobby, and it was ramen in particular. I couldn't find any ramen that I really, really loved, so I just started making it, and I kind of fell in love with the process. And anything to do with Japanese discipline is a very, very, it's a very hyper focused culture, so whatever you do get into, you kind of have to go all in, and that's what happened.
So you dived in head first into it. I mean, I hear that your ramen is handmade from scratch. Just talk me through the process of how you make it and a typical day for you, Niha, because I know you cook in front of your customers as well.
I am, yes. A typical day. So just to go back to the process of ramen is, it's what I call slow food fast. It takes a very long time to make, and it should really be consumed within like 5 minutes of being in front of you. It's noodles and broth, but the broth takes a really long time. It takes, in the restaurant now, it takes 12 hours to make. We have somebody on a night shift because it's a production that needs to, you just can't cut corners with it. Broth has to be cooked for a minimum 12 hours at least. And then the finishing of the broth takes another hour. So, we're looking at it, and then the noodles are their own process. So we're, all in all, you're looking at a bowl anywhere between 12 to 16 hours is what it takes to make a finished product. I'm in the restaurant from opening midday till closing, which is 1 a.m. And I'm in the ramen bar all day, and obviously seeing the guests throughout the day and cooking ramen for them.
Wow, what a life you have. That's pretty amazing. I mean, you said before you opened up your particular place that you couldn't find a ramen that was just spot on. I mean, what makes yours that little bit extra special? I mean, you've told me about the cooking process. My goodness, 12 hours and a little extra on top. But what do you think makes yours stand out?
I really think it's a personal taste. Ramen is a very, very personal, every ramen cook, master makes a ramen that's specific to their flavor profile. So when I say I couldn't find any that I liked, it's not because Dubai doesn't have great ramen. It's just because I couldn't find the one that I wanted to eat for myself. So, and that's why so many ramen shops in Japan can exist, because every ramen shop makes a ramen that's very, very unique to their own style, their own flavor profile. And so in essence, my ramen, like every other ramen shop that's out there, stands out because it's very unique and specific in its own flavor profile that can only really be created by the ramen chef. So, yeah.
So it's very unique to yourself, as you say. Now, my producer, Poonam, visited your restaurant last week. She said the food was amazing, but trying to actually get a seat at your restaurant took her about 2 weeks. I mean, did you think it would take off and be so successful this fast?
No, of course. I mean, of course I didn't. You hope for the best when you're opening a restaurant. And now that it has picked up the momentum that it has, it's got the interest that it does, I think as an operator, my main objective is to make sure that that's consistent and, you know, this is a sustainable pace, because every restaurant that's kind of been anticipated in terms of its opening has a really good run for the first couple of months. So I think, yes, it's wonderful to have the response that we've had, but I just want to make sure that it lasts.
Exactly. Yeah. Keep that momentum going. I mean, where can we find you? And, just describe the actual restaurant for me.
Right. So we are in the Greens, in the Onyx Towers. And we're kind of in the heart. The reason why I chose the location is because it was a very conscious decision to not be in a hotel. Two reasons. One, because in Japan, traditionally, you know, you find these little hidden gems in very, very inconspicuous buildings. And that was one of the main reasons for choosing a no-name building almost. But the other reason was also because I find the Greens is a really great area, which is a little bit underserviced, but also it caters to so many different neighborhoods. And I wanted to be accessible to people from, you know, whether they were people working in the area, whether it was families living here, or just, you know, people from all walks of life. So that was the decision behind the Greens. And, it's a very accessible, approachable location, which should allow pretty much anyone to be able to come when they want.
And what's the feedback been like from your customers? I mean, as you say, you're in front of them every day, cooking for them, chatting to them, you know. What's kind of the feedback been like?
It's been very positive so far. I mean, you know, I have a Japanese head chef that I brought out from Japan. So, and we've developed the menu together. So, you know, it's a very traditional izakaya Japanese menu, which should really be, even if you don't have an extensive knowledge of Japanese cuisine, just from a flavor point of view, it should be very easy to eat. And then, of course, we have complex, you know, we have really good technique with our sushi and sashimi. And then, of course, we have the ramen. So the feedback has been very positive. And we also have a growing interest with the Japanese community. So my objective, again, is to make sure that I'm, you know, relevant to both my local audience, guests, as well as the Japanese community. So just striking that balance constantly.
Yeah, so Niha, just between you and me now, not all the way. How can I jump the queue to get a table in your restaurant, Niha?
One hot tip would be that in the week between 3 and 5,
yeah,
it's a really, really good time because we've just gotten through the lunch service. We're about to transition into dinner. So it's a really nice little lull to the restaurant. So it's a good time to come for a walk-in if you have the time in the week.
Nice one.
And also, I'm always there. So there's, you know, the quieter times are always nice because I can have a little bit more interaction with the guests, that kind of thing. So it's, you know, yeah.
Good stuff.
I think 3 to 5.
After my show, after 2 o'clock, I'll wander over one of these days. Great to talk to you, Niha. So much passion, obviously, for your food, and we certainly wish you well for the rest of the year and onwards with your restaurant, Kinoya. You can find it over at the Greens.
This is Dubai Eye 103.8.
You're listening to Lunch with Lloyd.
Yeah, we go to the lines, and as always at this time on a Monday, that Dubai lad joins us, Vit Patel. How are you, sir?
Hi, good, thank you. And yourself?
Fantastic. Looking forward to the Eid break, are you, sir?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Looking forward to a few days of R&R.
Yes, I'm sure you deserve it, as, you know, yeah, it keeps you very, very busy, does Dubai lad. Now, what have the lads been talking about over the last week or so on your site?
Yes, so some of the viral news in the last week is that, and this is a nice one, two delivery drivers in Dubai were given 50,000 dirham bonuses.
Wow, that is amazing, isn't it? And I mean, what a difference that is going to make to their lives, Vip.
Yeah, definitely. And it's part of the company's thank you fund to these two drivers. I mean, they earn roughly around $4,000 to $5,000 a month. So this is genuinely a life-changing amount of money for them.
Yeah, I'm sure that is going to go a long, long way. I mean, do we know why they were chosen, and you know whether they were, you know, just amazing at their jobs? What the actual kind of selection process was?
Yeah, it's a good question. I'm not sure of the ins and outs of why they were chosen, but they have said that a lot of people have been really happy for them, but they've also experienced some jealousy as well from some of the other drivers, which is a bit of a shame.
Anyway, good luck to the pair of them, two Deliveroo drivers there, getting that incredible bonus. I'm sure that is really going to help their families back home. Nice start. What else have we got on the menu on Dubai Lad?
Yeah, another one, interesting one actually, is that UAE citizenship has been given to the Emirates boss and Kareem and Souk founders recently.
Okay, so this is citizenship to the city, which is absolutely wonderful, to the country, of course. So tell me a little bit more about who's actually received it.
Yeah, so the founders of Kareem and Souk, which is, both of them actually, like great success stories for startups in this region. They've both been recognised for their efforts in giving UAE nationality, and so is Sir Tim Clark, who is the Emirates Airlines boss.
Excellent news for both of them. I mean, what would it mean to you to be given UAE citizenship? I mean, it's a real honour, isn't it, Vip?
Yeah, I mean, I'd happily take it. I mean, this is home for me now. So to be recognised in that way would be absolutely fantastic. And it's kind of like it spurs you on, doesn't it, to try and do great things in this region if you recognise like that.
Absolutely. I mean, it would be a great honour to be recognised, you know, and especially a lot of us have been here a long, long time. It would really go a long, long way, that's for sure. Okay, so good luck to the guys that have got the citizenship. What other stories have been floating around on Dubai Lad?
Another one that's floating around, and this is a bit of a wild one, a UAE man who set fire to his neighbour's house for constant hammering was jailed for 3 months.
And so he should be. I mean, who on earth would do that? And why? Why would you do that?
I know, yeah, it's a man in Ajman. He'd been experiencing like noise issues from his neighbour with constant hammering. Apparently he'd reported to the police 9 times, but not much had been done. So he decided to take matters into his own hands, which we do not recommend at all. Yeah, unsurprisingly, he was arrested and jailed for 3 months after making his own version of a Molotov cocktail and throwing it onto the balcony of his neighbour.
Not good at all. That gets a definite downer from us guys here. Finally, though, on a lighter note and on certainly a more positive note, a lot of money has been raised around the world to help people, you know, that are less fortunate than us.
Yeah, we're going to end on a high here. So Dubai charities have helped 83 million people in over 82 countries in the last year. So despite the pandemic, they've had a record year of helping people. And the charities have used $1.2 billion on various projects around the world to help those in need, which is a fantastic achievement considering everything that's gone on in the past year.
Absolutely. So ending on a high there. Plans for the Eid break, Vip? What's the Dubai Lad going to be getting up to? Or is it, you know, still in the office getting all the news together?
No, we're off the Eid. But for me, it's just time to relax, go down to the beach, spend some time at the pool and with the family.
Good stuff, Vip. Well, as always, we love having you on the show. And thanks so much for coming on to chat about what the lads are talking about this week from Dubai Lad.
This is Lunch with Lloyd.
On Dubai Eye, 103.8.
Yeah, great to have your company, as always, on Lunch with Lloyd. Now, as well as my human listeners, I hope my four-legged friend listeners are all set for this next interview. I'm going to ask you a question. Have you ever wondered what your pets actually think about you? Well, now you can, as joining me is animal communicator Fatima Zahra on the line. Fatima, I'll say good afternoon to you. How are you?
Hi, good afternoon. I'm good. And yourself?
Yeah, very good. And it's a real pleasure to have you joining us on the show. So first of all, let me ask you, what is an animal communicator and what do you exactly do?
Well, very simple. An animal communicator is one who can understand and translate the thoughts, feelings, and sensations of an animal.
Okay, so how do you actually go about doing that? How do you feel that, you know, the thoughts and feel the emotions of different kinds of animals?
Okay, so animals communicate with us all the time. They do that via telepathy. When I speak with animals, they allow me to feel their energy and see what is in their mind. I feel their emotional feelings and communicate with them mentally, without using any words or other physical signals. So for example, let's say I'm communicating with a depressed horse. The horse will then send me feelings of how it feels to be depressed and down in the dumps, how it feels to be on the verge of tears all the time and in a state of despair. He will then show me what he's going through by playing a sort of movie clip in my mind, or by telling me whilst having a conversation with me, just like how you and I are conversing right now.
How did you discover that you got this, you know, talent, gift, call it what you like? I mean, when did it first kind of occur to you that you could actually communicate with animals?
So this actually is a very interesting story. This happened a few years ago. I was always very much connected to animals since I was younger. But a few years ago, when I was working in equine therapy, I had an autistic child on a horse that I was taking care of. He was 18 years old and he couldn't speak at all. And autistic children are extremely strong and very smart in their own ways. He needed to go to the bathroom and because he couldn't communicate, he started hitting the horse. And I was afraid that the horse would rear up and throw him off. And so I mentally quickly sent out a note to the horse saying that, you know, please do not rear up because I'm really scared. This child is my responsibility. And the horse instantly replied back by saying, no, don't worry at all. I won't move an inch because I know this child's energy is very unstable. And childishly, I then returned and asked the horse, do you promise? And he said, yes, I promise. The horse didn't move a muscle, didn't even twitch. And once the child was gotten down and he was safe, the horse was led back to the stables. And he then turned his head around and said, you see, I told you. And that was my first instance into animal communication and telepathy. That was my first experience.
Yeah, that was your first experience. So, I mean, how did you develop that then? You know, once you realized that you'd got this kind of this talent, how do you develop it? And how did you continue to, you know, understand the feelings of other animals?
Well, the understanding the feelings of other animals came naturally. The thing that didn't come naturally were the movie clips and sort of videos that used to play in my mind. The conversing and emotions were okay. And, well, all I did was I kept talking to every single animal I saw. So if I had birds on my windowsill, I'd make sure I'd communicate with them. If I saw a cat, a stray cat, I'd just quickly send out a mental hello. And it was always amazing just to see how they would whip their heads around just to see if someone was actually communicating with them. They were always in a state of shock. And then I just started practicing even more with my friends' pets until I finally got the hang of it and could do it for a longer period of time. In the beginning, it wasn't easy. Trust me, in a minute, you get a headache. And it's not easy to just continue doing it. But then later on, as you progress, it just gets very easy.
So, you know, you've given an example of a horse that you could kind of communicate the feelings. I mean, does this happen with all kinds of animals or are some animals more difficult to communicate with than others?
Well, all species of animals have the ability to communicate telepathically. The process remains the same and does not differ if your pet is an insect, a mammal, bird, amphibian or reptile. I've communicated with all sorts of animals, birds, lions, dogs, cats, goats, snakes, cows, turtles, flies, you name it. So okay. It doesn't really differ. It's pretty much the same.
I mean, I'm thinking one of my favorite movies was The Horse Whisperer that starred Robert Redford. And, you know, we've all seen as well the guy, is it Cesar Romano who does the dog whispering and, you know, helps in behavioral problems. Maybe dogs that are constantly tearing the house apart or causing issues when they go for a walk. I mean, have you done that? Have you come across difficult animals that you've helped to kind of calm down and change their personality?
Yes, actually, there have been many animals that have behavioral issues or that are very anxious or stressed. Stress is actually one of the most common factors I experience when I communicate with animals, and it's mostly coming from a past life trauma or from the human who's their guardian. So because they're so closely connected with their guardian, they sort of start mirroring their emotions and their thoughts, and they become like them. Like if you have a pet, it's very, very oftenly you'll see that you and the pet are pretty much very similar. Your attitude is similar. Your personality is similar. It's because he's mirroring you. And so they do, once they have a lot of stress, it's usually coming from the human many times. And so once the human calms down, automatically the animal calms down and balances out as well.
Okay, so it's putting the human right that, that is kind of the top of the list. I mean, talk me through, you know, a typical day for you, you know, dealing with various kinds of animals and what you kind of get up to on a daily basis.
So on a daily basis, it's usually one or two readings. I don't do more than one or two per day because it gets emotionally and physically taxing on me. Because I experience all the emotions the animal sends me and all the communications, I physically feel them in my body in order for me to tell you. So, for example, if an animal is hurting, I can then tell you that the animal's right tooth is hurting, the molar is hurting, and this is how it feels. It's either a throbbing sensation or a knife-like sensation because I feel it. And it, I mean, can you imagine feeling all these feelings on a daily basis, feelings that you've never felt before?
Yeah, it must be quite taxing, I can tell you.
Yeah, exactly. So I do that. It's usually a communication or two per day and then some Reiki healings as well in order to help balance them out. So that's what I do every day. And it depends. So usually everything is done via distance because it is COVID time. Otherwise, yeah. I'm usually at the owner's house. So either at the stables with a horse or at their house, helping deal with any issues that they may have. If it's just a general communication, or if they would like any behavioral issues solved, or maybe suddenly an animal has suddenly stopped eating and they don't know why they're doing that, or they've suddenly become very aggressive. And so I help with that, with those sort of things as well, just by listening to the animal and understanding how they feel from their viewpoint.
Wow, fascinating stuff, Fatima. If people want to find out more about you and follow you and, you know, follow this kind of animal communication, where can they do that?
So they can do that on my Facebook and Instagram platforms as well. My name is Unheard Miracles, and they can see all my testimonials there, all my work there, and everything's right
great
there.
Stuff. Unheard Miracles, Fatima, it's been great chatting with you, and what an incredible story you have to tell. That's Fatima Zahra there, the animal communicator.
This is Lunch with Lloyd.
On Dubai Eye, 103.8.
Now, one thing that I just love to do is talk music. And our next guest, Albert Carter, is the CEO of a company called Audio Swim, creating a new era for music and helping artists jump onto the NFT bandwagon. He joins us live right now on the show and on Teams. I'll say good afternoon, Albert. How are you?
Good afternoon. I'm good. Thank you so much for having me.
Wow, you are sounding the part. You started out as a rapper, didn't you, 15 years ago. Tell me about your growth in the music business.
Well, pretty much I touch the music business from every aspect you can possibly imagine, whether it's from a musician standpoint, from a managerial standpoint, owned a record label, and now I'm into the distribution and full-scale label services space. So I kind of scaled up and had an idea that progressed from a musician's point of view.
All right. So from your musical roots, you've kind of gotten into the business side, I guess, of music. And you're here in the UAE. Tell me what NFT actually means and how, you know, it will help benefit musicians here in this region.
Sure. So NFT stands for non-fungible tokens, and it's basically a digital asset on the blockchain. So what we're doing with NFTs is pretty much allowing artists to have more control over their music as far as royalty splits. What we're having is royalties are being placed as NFTs on the blockchain, and people are able to buy some of the royalties. So that way, every time an artist gets paid, the fan or whoever the investor is of that particular NFT, they get paid as well.
So it sounds like it's definitely a win situation for the artists. I mean, are there any...
It's a win-win for all parties, yep.
Are there any big names doing this? You know, big artists that we all know that have gotten into this kind of NFT?
Yeah, it's a lot of people in this space right now, in the NFT space. We have, personally, we're working with a few artists in the region. But globally, you know, you have artists that's, you know, such as Jay-Z, who just invested a large amount of money with his NFT project, as well as Nas. And we're recently targeting a very popular artist that we really can't disclose the name just yet, but they are very popular, and they went diamond. Their album actually sold 10 million records. So that just gives you a hint of how big this space has potential to be.
I mean, what about people that are, you know, just trying to break into the business? We talk to a lot of musicians that are based here in Dubai that are releasing really good songs, you know, and it's such a different landscape, certainly to when I was growing up, you know, and it was all about record labels. It's so different now. So how will it benefit, you know, guys that and girls that perhaps we haven't heard of yet?
Well, basically, we try to create something called a super fan, right? So we have the fans have a vested interest in each of their favorite independent artists. Now, we focus fully on independent artists. We don't really deal with a lot of artists assigned to major labels, just because we want to have the artists have more control of their music. So basically, we're creating super fans. So your friends and family will always promote your music. But when they have a vested interest financially into promoting your music, it tends to go a lot further. So that's our goal. Our goal is to create a super fan for each artist that we work with.
Okay. And you know, this is, do you think this is a model going forward that is going to become more and more popular in the music business? And are large record labels going to be a thing of the past? Are they dinosaurs, or will there still be a place for them?
Well, I think there's always going to be a place for large record labels just because they are the machine that drives the music industry forward, right? They tend to be late bloomers in the sense of they can afford to come in late. You know, they can afford to kind of pick up the motto of, you know, of what's going on trendy music, you know, later on down the line because of the financial backing. But NFTs will be the future of music, similar to how, you know, music started off as vinyl records, and then it progressed to 45s and progressed to 8-tracks, and then cassettes, the CD players, MP3s, and, you know, now we have the streaming part. Now the next stage is NFTs. And that's actually a bit better because now the artist has a little bit more control of their music. Also, copywriting issues won't be as prevalent as they are right now just because everything is documented on the blockchain. The blockchain is pretty much unhackable, so it's kind of hard to fudge things that's in on the blockchain.
So say I've got a favorite artist here in Dubai that's, yep, you know, just making inroads into the business. How can I go about, you know, investing in their future and getting involved in this NFT?
Right. So on our platform, it's actually launching at the end of next month, at the end of June. On our platform, you'll have the opportunity to kind of log in with your own login information and see the artist that puts their music through AudioSwim. It will still go on to Spotify. It will still go on to Apple Music, TikTok, all of the mainstream players. However, you'll have an opportunity to bid on it. So every time they get paid from Spotify, every time they get paid from iTunes and all of the big DSPs, you actually get a percentage of that money because you are now invested in that person. So it can only work if they distribute their product through AudioSwim, and only if they want that model. You know, so it's essentially equity crowdfunding through royalty investment.
Okay. I mean, we all know the music industry is a lot of fun, but it's a tough one to survive in as well. What tips would you have for young artists, you know, that are just getting into the business and wanting to get out there and be different and you know, show their talent?
Right. I would suggest, man, learn from people's mistakes. You know, it's a lot of people that have been in the business for a long time. And what artists tend to do is go the long route. Right. They tend to see, you know, the end result of the big musicians, and they don't really understand the process. But it's out there. Everything is pretty much documented through interviews, through books, whatever it is that you learn best by. Just learning from mistakes, you know, and also investing in to their career. You know, a lot of this, and not just financially, but relationships as well, because a lot of this business is built on relationships. And then, you know, you have services like me where we do full scale label services. So we help artists from the idea of music. If they just want to produce a song, we help them from that all the way down to the end, where it's marketing, promotion, and even royalty investment. So we help in all avenues. So like I said, we are full scale label service department. So anything like that can definitely benefit an artist.
I mean, you're obviously very clued up on the business side of things. But I mean, when you were starting out, did you make any mistakes? Did you get ripped off? You know?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure. Well, I have two specific things. But one, my dancing is the reason why I probably never made it. You know? But secondly, I would give my music freely to anybody who want to listen. And there's a very popular artist who took a song that I've actually had and rapped over and everything. And they took the same beat. They took the instrumental and kind of changed a little bit of it and then put it out there. And it was a very, very popular song. I don't want to say the artist's name, but I can let you hear the music off here.
Well, once again, Albert, fascinating conversation with you. Audio Swim, just tell me where we can, you know, find out more musicians that are perhaps listening to the show, how they can get involved with Audio Swim.
Sure, sure. If you go to www.audioswim.com, and it's a form you fill out that's on the homepage. It has everything that we do and what you need to do in order to get in contact with us. Again, that's www.audioswim.com. And also, I'm very accessible through my personal website, which is albertmcarter.com.
Fantastic, Albert. Really enjoyed the conversation. And I'm sure there's going to be big names coming out of this region with Audio Swim and you behind them. Thanks so much for joining us on the show.
This is Dubai Eye 103.8.
You're listening to Lunch with Lloyd.
Yeah, great to have your company on this afternoon. Now, the Dubai Drama Group, of course, they've been around a long time and have put on some incredible productions over the years. The good news is they've got another one coming to the stage. The Permanent Way is what it's called. And we're going to chat right now to not only the director, but a couple of actors. We've got Catherine Broad, who's the director of Permanent Way. Catherine, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having us on.
It's always a pleasure. Penny McKenzie, how are you, Penny?
I'm great. It's lovely to hear your voice.
And you as well, Penny. And we've got actor Jonathan Duff joining us on the show as well. Jonathan, good afternoon.
Good afternoon,
Rob. Right then, let's get straight into it, Catherine. Of course, live theatre has been one of the industries that's suffered quite a lot throughout the pandemic. What's it like to get a show back on stage, Penny?
Catherine.
No problem. It's really exciting to finally be here. I mean, as you said, the theatre industry and the arts and entertainment industry really suffered over the past year, but also saw some really great innovations. I myself got involved with online productions, but it's great to actually be live in the theatre, back in rehearsals, and actually putting on an experience for an audience. So it has changed slightly. The rehearsal process has changed. The way we experience theatre has changed. We've had to take a lot of things into consideration for the safety of the cast, everyone involved, and the audience. So that's been slightly different, having to work around that.
You mentioned about having, you know, that you've done some productions online. Have you learned anything from that? You know, have you picked up anything that maybe you can apply now that you're getting back on stages?
Yeah, the thing I know is to actually involve the audience as much as possible. And this, you know, it's more engaging for them and the actors as well. And that's what we've done with this play. There's a bit more engagement from the audience. The actors talk directly to the audience. And it's really something different that I think Dubai hasn't done yet, as it's because it's a verbatim piece of theatre and it's on a traverse stage, which means the audience are going to be sitting either side of the stage. So you could sit in one side and get a slightly different experience from someone maybe sitting at the other side.
Okay, now Penny, tell me about your character or characters. I believe you're playing not just one, but several different characters. What's that like?
It's interesting, actually. In fact, most cast members are playing more than one part, which makes it dynamic and exciting. For me, I have to learn a whole lot of accents, and I'm not an English person, so that's been challenging, but I'm up for it.
So you've got to put on a few different accents. Are those kind of regional accents from across the UK?
Yeah, regional accents. What's been interesting is that I thought that it would be uniquely difficult for me not being English, but in actual fact, just listening to some of the other cast members who are from Great Britain, they're also having to really work quite hard at getting accents right. And it's a good feeling to work that voice.
It is, isn't it? Let's bring Jonathan in here. I mean, we're talking about accents and, you know, from around the UK. Again, you're playing a number of characters. Tell me about some of the regional dialects that you've had to kind of master for your role in Permanent Way.
Yes. The main thing is to try to differentiate yourself through your voice and your body. And I'm actually, you won't hear it from my voice, but I'm originally from Northern Ireland. So one of the characters has a mild Northern Irish accent. My first character, passenger number 5, has a kind of Cockney white boy's accent, or at least that's what I'm trying to portray. And others are kind of neutral.
Yeah. Okay, so we've got several. We've got a Cockney. We've got from different parts of the actual UK. Just coming back to Catherine, what made you choose this play, and what is the storyline behind it, The Permanent Way?
So The Permanent Way is about the railways in the UK being privatised in 1991. Now, David Hare, the playwright, who took first-hand accounts of people involved in this, done something really clever, and he's chopped up everything they've said and presented it in a play. And it's so interesting because it's about railways, yes, but what it really comes down to is human nature and about all these people who experienced this time, because what happened was a lot of rail crashes, and unfortunately some people lost their lives. So we meet characters who are involved, responsible for running the railways, who were dealing with the actual incidences, and we meet people who were on the railways when they crashed and survived, and some people who lost loved ones. So it's a really interesting piece, and what I loved about it is I am a historian at heart, and I've been wanting to direct something for many years. And I always thought it might be something a bit more classical, but when I found this 2 years ago, I just fell in love with it, because I think anyone can relate to it. The themes of power, greed, grief, love, loss, it's really relatable. And it was just such a clever piece of writing. And also, as they were saying, they've got so many different characters to play. We have 12 cast members with 49 characters. That's how talented this cast are and having to work. And it's just so interesting to watch. And this is a true story, and there's some really shocking things you find out in it. So yeah, it's just so engaging, and it's also storytelling of the people who lived through this.
Let's bring Penny in again. We just heard that, you know, 12 cast members, 49 characters. How many have you got, Penny?
I have, that's a good question. I haven't actually counted. 1, 2, 3, 4, 4.
Four, you've got 4 that you've got to get your head around. Okay, and I mean, where are we at the moment? I mean, we're 10 days out from your first performance. So, you know, how's it all going? And, you know, once you start getting into the final week, I guess, you know, you're really getting into your characters and really, you know, putting everything that you've got into these rehearsals.
It's locking it down at this stage, isn't it? You've kind of developed the character, you've inspired and researched the parts, the roles, the action. So it really is just tidying it up and tightening it up for the members of the audience. But, you know, it's really been fascinating because while we've been rehearsing, there was a major accident in Egypt on the railways. There was a major accident in Mexico City. And it just brought home to me that this is an international problem. The politics, the mindset, the emotions, what happens to people, it's not just the UK that this affects. It affects people all over the world who use public transport.
Yeah, it sounds like a very fascinating production. So, Catherine, when it comes to performances, how many are there going to be? Where's the venue? And what about tickets?
Right. So we have 4 performances. And the first one is Thursday, the 20th of May, and that's at 7:30 p.m. We also have an evening performance at the same time on Friday, the 21st of May, and Saturday, the 22nd of May. And we have a matinee at 3 p.m. on Saturday, the 22nd of May as well. It's in a fantastic venue in Alcoz, so a great location right near Shakeside Road in Warehouse 4. You can find it on their website and in Google Maps and tickets. So we've still got tickets left, which is great. They are selling fast, but they're available at ticketslovers.com. And you can find our particular event at ticketlovers.com/Dubai/event/the permanent way.
Yeah, we mentioned that you're very happy, Catherine, to have your cast back on stage. Is this the first of what hopefully will be a busy season for you guys at the drama group?
We hope so. Dubai Drama Group has been going since 1984, and believe it or not, this is our 86th production in Dubai.
Wow.
So we hope there's many more to come. We want to reach that 100th mark.
I'm sure you do. Well, Catherine, Penny and Jonathan, once again, the cast and director of The Permanent Way, we wish you well for your forthcoming production.
You're listening to Lunch with Lloyd
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
And don't forget to join me on the show, of course, at weekdays from 11 o'clock on Lunch with Lloyd, only on Dubai Eye 103.8.